downloads of this show are available on Podomatic.com and the Podomatic mobile app.
Hey, it's time for Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit. And I'm Dr. Lisa. I give a shit. You know, it's so fucking cold, right? It's like 3 degrees out there. But you know what? So here's what I want to tell you today. I want to get this over with. I have something I have to sort of like clue you in on about me. It's not not a big deal. But before I do that, I just want to thank you for listening to Radio Free Brooklyn and Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit. And, you know, we do this. This is an all-volunteer organization, and it's a really great organization. And we try to, entertain you. We try to educate you. We do so many. We have a teen program. We're helping the community. And I think it would be great if we would appreciate, like, a $5, a $2 donation's a lot for us. No, really. You know, you give that $2 to, like, a big, you know, to another, any other organization, they're not even going to notice. So it's radiofreebrooklyn.org/donate. Please go to our website, find out about us, join us. Hello. So here's what I want to tell you. I want to tell you about my Invisaligners, because this week I got Invisaligners. Now this is going to be, I have to wear these things in case, look it up. All right. I'm not going to explain this all to you. So they're like braces, if you don't know, but they're clear plastic, so the idea is you can't really see them when I'm wearing them or when people are wearing them, but that you wear them for 3 months and then they straighten out your teeth. So here's the thing. I might sound a little lispy or different. You may notice the difference, but you know what? I am not fucking taking them out, and I'm going to tell you why. Because you're supposed to wear them 22 out of 24 hours a day. And I realized I've only had them since Tuesday. This is cutting into my eating and drinking time, folks. And you can't eat or drink anything but water, which is, you know, bullshit. So a cup of coffee, that's at least a half an hour, 45 minutes. A glass of wine, that's an hour. Then you put in dinner, breakfast and lunch, no snacks. I mean, I'm totally freaking out. So I don't know. I'm not taking it out for the podcast. I thought for this show, and I thought maybe I would, but there's no fucking way. So if I sound a little weird, too fucking bad. I'm going to my guest today, Rosa. I mean, I didn't ask you how to pronounce your last name, and I'm going to get it wrong. I know it. Say it.
Do you want to try?
Escondo? Escondo?
You know, you got my, it's Escandon.
Escandon.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which is, honestly, I've been on so many podcasts and so many, I'm a comedian, so like so many shows, and I get brought up with the wrong name constantly. So it almost just kind of washes over me now.
Sure you do. I'm sure you do. But I want to get it right. I think it's out of respect.
Oh, well, thank you.
And so here's the deal with Rosa. Rosa is, first of all, she's an incredibly young, talented, multi-talented powerhouse. I'm just going to say that. Okay, you like that. You're a powerhouse. She's written for, she's only 25, which is so, like, intimidating to me, frankly. And she's written for, like, Esquire regularly. She's an editor for The Tusk.
Not Esquire, Forbes. I'm at Forbes.
Forbes, sorry.
That is close enough, honestly.
No, you know.
Esquire, call me. I'll write for you.
Esquire.
I'm like, I'm thinking it into.
Forbes. That's like
I'm
even.
Forbes.
Forbes. The Tusk, she's been on BuzzFeed Video. She's involved with this really awesome art gallery organization, Think 1994 Museum, which is really unbelievable. I could go on the board of
Cinderblock Comedy
Cinderblock
Festival.
Comedy.
And now working on the Black Women in Comedy Festival. So.
Yeah, and this is new. So tell us a little bit about that.
It's great.
Say again what it is.
It's the Black Women in Comedy Festival.
How many years has that been around?
It's the inaugural year, which is why we're really excited about it.
Non-girl year?
The inaugural. First year.
Oh, God.
First year.
Inaugural. Oh, yeah. I like my idea.
Non-girl. No.
You should have a non-girl year where it's all just, men. A women's comedy
festival. The non-girl year. No. Or just like, you know, people who are like, I'm a woman, not a girl. No, we have...
Inaugural. Excellent.
Inaugural. Yeah. It's in Bed-Stuy, Brooklyn. It's going to be happening the weekend that melds February and March. The Black History Month with Women's History Month. Huge. It's going to be a huge party where you have four venues all in Bed-Stuy, which is going to be amazing. And I think something like 65 performers over four venues for 4 days. It's going to be a big, crazy party. And I'm very excited about
it. That seems like such an exciting thing to be part of in the very, very beginning.
Yeah. And it's interesting because, you know, obviously you're looking at me, the radio audience isn't, but I always joke I'm like the token white girl on the board. So.
Yeah, well, you know, she's very white. You're about as white pink as they get.
I'm almost clear is what I heard. So, yeah, especially in the winter. I haven't seen sun in 6 months.
So, like, biologically, you're half Jewish?
Yes.
Hmm.
Yeah. Two moms. One's Jewish, one's Hispanic, and... I have a dad who I know, he's great, but he's 100% Irish and I look exactly like him.
Oh, okay. Irish and Jewish, because you don't look, you have no Hispanic blood, you don't look like you do. But you have that, you have a last name like that, so that's great. So that must blow everybody's mind, right?
People will be like, and next up, Rosa Escandone, and like, I'll be there and it's like, oh, that's Rosa Escandone? Are you sure? Like, it's funny because both of my mothers, are both like have like this beautiful dark black hair, like dark hair and these like really great olive skin. And I am just a big old potato.
So did people think that you were adopted a lot growing up?
Well, my mom tells a story where people actually thought she was the nanny.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's so funny.
I think back in, let's see, I was born in 1993. You already said I was 25. I'm not telling any secrets here. But it was actually very hard, I know, for queer people, like queer couples to adopt back then. So I don't think a lot of people were like, oh, they're, you know,
lesbian. Oh, I never thought of that.
So I mean, it was a little bit easier in California. I'm from Oakland, California. It was easier, but I know of the era, it was definitely still a struggle to get LGBT folks adopting kids.
Right.
I think it's easier now, though I'm not actually sure.
I hope so.
I hope it's easy.
So back to me. And then I just want to finish up with the Invisaligners because you're like the third person that I have actually spoken to. Can you see them? Look.
I actually can't. My mother also just got Invisaligners. And she was visiting New York like 2 weeks ago and she kept having to take them in, take them out. And
they're
horrible. She was like, it's rough, but it's so much better. I had braces for years. Like years and years and years as a kid because I had some messed up teeth.
Mm-hmm.
So like, I'm like, oh, this looks great. Like you can't even notice them.
So what was it? So you have two mothers. So was that like, what was that like? How old were you? Did you figure it was unusual or like, was it unusual or you grew up in Oakland, right?
Yeah.
So that's a very liberal community.
Well, and I think also my dad is like straight. He's been married for almost 30 years now to a woman, but
and he was friendly with your parents.
Yeah, he's like a friend of the family who donated sperm, but has also always been like, I don't love calling him a sperm donor because I think
he's more than that.
He's
been involved in your life.
Yeah, we went on a family vacation this year. Like,
what is a family vacation?
It's me, his wife, my boyfriend, my two sisters, and my brother, all of his kids. They're all half siblings. And we all went to Michigan for the family reunion. Big Irish family, you know, uncles, cousins.
Oh, so you have half?
He has three kids with his wife of about 30 years.
And are you an only child then?
Only child from my mother's, like from their side. It's a little confusing because like I grew up. All of my siblings went to the same high school and like I grew up in the town I grew up in Oakland. They grew up in Berkeley, California. They share a board. Like they were always around. We went to the same high school. We went like when we were kids, we like hung out at their house, like, you know, whenever my mom was working, like
you had the same dad.
Yeah, we all have the same dad. We do. Like, I went over there for Christmas this last year. Like,
but in your household, you were the only child.
So I always say I'm a half only child. That is half from a so big funny. Family.
So that must have been great having them around, though, right?
Yeah, it's
did
great.
Did they accept, like, because you guys all grew up together, did they accept, like, that you had, you know, two mommies?
Oh, yeah. It was never a conversation. I'm the youngest of the girls. Like, there's two older sisters, me and then a younger brother, too. So I'm not even on one side or the other. Me and my sister are only, like, 8 months apart. We're not that, like, we're not even a full 9 months.
Do you remember how you felt about it growing up? Did you ever think, I wish I was part of that family or anything like that, or it's great I've got these two moms to myself. What was your thinking about it?
It was a little weird because I don't know if I necessarily, like, especially growing up, thought of it as another family. Like, it wasn't like, oh, I wish I was a part of that family. I'm like, I'm the half sister of this family, which, you know, and I think honestly, because a lot of people ask me, was it weird growing up? Like in a two female, like in this, like, different type of family household. And I always am like, I'm not sure actually, because when you're in it, when you're a kid, you don't realize those things.
Sure.
Like, that isn't like, you're like, this is my family. This is this. It, I don't even know if it really struck me until I moved to the East Coast, how strange our situation was, because I went to, like, cause all of my friends in high school and all of my friends, even in middle school, like, knew, like, oh, she has moms, like, you know, there was every once in a while there was a bully who would, like, say something, but, like, nothing that was, like, so out of it that I was thinking that
way. It sounds like your family was really comfortable with it, so you were really comfortable with it, and you had, like, a good foundation, like, all those people and whatever. I also think that there's maybe a big difference, not a big difference, but I think there's got to be a difference between somebody that has two mommies that, like, has a relationship with the dad. I think that is a nice thing.
Yeah.
I think if your dad is more anonymous, that would be different. What do you think?
Maybe. I mean, I can't talk from it, because I have no idea. But I did have a lot of friends growing up, too, that had, like, one of my first, like, friends at work at my first job had two moms. I had another friend in, like, growing up, who had two moms as well, and he had a younger brother. The couple across the street was lesbians. Like, I have to say, I think also having lesbian parents at the time, especially, they were in, like, very much, like, the community. So, like, a lot of people I knew were gay couples or lesbian couples, or, you know, I was one of the only kids in that community. I remember that a lot of people didn't have kids until I was, like, much older. But you were surrounded by, you know, queer couples.
Normal
and
people.
Like, there was so many, and especially this is, you know, 90s San Francisco. This is like, you know, like 1997 San Francisco, which is like really the last of the gay meccas. Like, it was, you know,
so that's really
a very
good.
Different vibe.
Well, it sounds like your parents did a good job of, you know, choosing or raising you or putting you in being themselves. Being in an environment that was open and accepting and supportive.
Honestly, I think they moved there because neither of them are originally from the Bay Area. They're both from, like, the West Coast. My mom was born in Seattle and grew up in LA. And then the other one was from San Luis Obispo, like a small town in the middle part of California. So I think both of them, like, on purpose moved to the Bay Area in the 80s because they were like, that's where queer people go. Like, it wasn't even so much as, like, we want to be in a place. It's like, you moved to San Francisco. One worked at a coffee shop. One worked at a record company. Like, they just were like, that's where queer people go to work and things.
Right.
And they met when they were both working on graduate degrees at Cal. So.
Oh, and so would they, so your parents were always, like, always knew they were lesbians and.
Yeah. I mean, I think.
Neither of them had been married or anything like that.
No, neither of them.
Or had long-term relationships with men. It was pretty.
I know one of my mother's dated guys in college. She had, like, two boyfriends in college.
She gave it a shot.
Yeah, I don't. Well, I don't know if she was even out, really. Like, she didn't, you know, it took her a while to realize that. I know my mom had the other mom. I think she's more of, like, queer. I do think like, I know that she finds like men attractive. I know she had like boyfriends in high school, but mm-hmm. I don't think she's had any like long-term relationships with men.
Do your parents have roles that might imitate male or female roles or anything like that? Or how do you see them?
One does seem a little bit like a goofy dad. She like tells dad jokes and stuff. But no, I don't really think so.
Yeah. Do you notice that in other families men have a different role?
Role. I mean, I think thankfully I grew up around like fathers who weren't old school fathers. Like I know in my grandparents, mm-hmm. like this was like, I see it in like in my grandparents a little of like, this is a man's role, this is a woman's role. But I was really blessed to grow up in places where like,
there wasn't any of that.
Yeah. So. Which I think is just in a way like toxic masculinity. Like I think the idea that like dads do this and wives do this is like mm-hmm. kind of in this bad place of like under, you know, like, oh, women do all the terrible jobs and men take out the trash. Like,
yeah,
it's like,
no,
all right.
Totally.
Which is, I just,
It's fortunate that you haven't had that.
Yeah,
you haven't grown up with that.
And I see it sometimes now, but like, and a lot of times those relationships are not good relationships. Like, I think that men who think their wives should do this or should do that, or it's a man's role, it's a man's thing, is like, those are never really that healthy mm-hmm. of relationships. So I don't know. I'm a little bit, I guess, post-gender in some ways in that way. Like, I'm very much a cis woman, but I don't really believe in like these roles come from anything or like actually mean
anything. Yeah. No, I get it. Do your parents have a good relationship?
So they've been split up since I was a kid.
What?
Yeah.
Really?
No, my parents have not been together since like, I don't know.
I mean,
like
I'm talking
mid-90s.
About your two moms.
Yep.
Your two moms have been separated?
Yeah. Since like the mid-90s.
Since you were how old?
I think like probably like 2 or 3. Like I was young.
So how did that work out? Did you stay with one did they have 50-50?
Are they technically
divorced or married or anything?
Never married. I mean, gay marriage was.
Yeah, they couldn't be married.
Definitely
right.
not married. No.
Isn't that stupid?
Yeah. And even when I was a kid, like civil unions were new. I think they existed, but like not a lot of people had like mm-hmm. even like full union rights at that mm-hmm. time. So. Because I remember, you know, in the early 90s, people were still like getting kicked out of hospitals and stuff, like, you know, for trying to visit their lovers. Like, it was still a time where like that wasn't even super on the horizon yet.
So what happened? How did they get separated or what was that? How old were you?
I was young. I was real young.
Like 2 or 3 or toddler.
Yeah.
Do you remember them living together?
Very, very little. Mm-hmm. It's actually kind of funny. The house I grew up in, one moved out when I was like very young, and I grew up in that house until I was like 14. So I lived in that house for many, many years, and the other one just bought it.
Oh, that's
from
hilarious.
They have a good relationship
they're
now.
Friends?
Yeah, they have. I don't know if I would even fully call them friends, but they definitely have a really good relationship. Like, I don't think they text each other about anything that's not about me. Or mm-hmm.
they're co-parents.
Yeah, they're great co-parents. Friends and, feels yeah, pushing it sometimes.
No, so it's really about supporting you and making and caring. It's about caring for you together, but they do a great job of that.
Yeah, they do a great job. When I was really young, they were like a little bit more hostile. Like I even remember when I was like 7, like them being hostile and like, you know, like a normal divorced couple might be, but it's been, you know. over 20 years now. So,
but you know, that's interesting because neither of them really, or I don't know. I mean, was both their, you were, I don't know how that works. Are you legally bound to both of them?
So no. So I'm legally, my birth mother, she's the only person on my birth certificate.
And
is
that one of your mothers?
Yeah. So like one of them gave birth to me. She's the only person on the birth certificate. But at the time, lesbians could adopt their partner's child.
Right.
But only if they stayed together. And they were in the middle of adoption processes when they broke up.
Oh, my God.
Meaning the other one lost all rights. But she stuck around. She, like, had me, you know, not like probably like 40% of the 40-60 kind of split on the week. You know, she stayed in my life. And technically, when I was over 18, I could legally let her adopt me. Like, I don't need another. Right. But we never did it. I guess we could. We might do it when, like, whenever she feels like her, it would help her will. Like, she might randomly do it for, like, if there's, like, an estate tax thing. But other than that, yeah, no.
But there's something really nice about that, isn't there? Something really, like, you know, that like, I mean, because I think in hetero divorces, sometimes, like, one of the parents would bail.
Yeah, and I honestly think, like, both of them really want to be mothers. Like, they're, I don't know if they necessarily want, mm-hmm. like, I don't know. They're not good together. Like, even when I look at them now, I'm like, how is this a viable couple?
Right, right.
And one of them is remarried now to a woman. Yeah. Got married right before Prop 8 passed and stayed married since then. So now 11 years she's been married.
So is there one that you live with more than the other, or you did live with more than the other?
When I was young, yes, but not super much. Like, mm-hmm. I would say, like, probably like a 60-40 split. Like, not, right.
But
not one more day a week.
Do you think of her as more of your primary caregiver more, a little more?
Necessarily.
You're really fair with them.
I'm really fair with them, which I think it's the same way as, like, you know, when your dad is, like, when your mom and dad divorce, like, sometimes the dad gets, like, a little bit less time.
Yeah,
or something. I don't know. It's, like, kind of feels like that. But you wouldn't say, like, your dad is less of a parent.
No, but, you know? It's funny. When you mix in the stereotypes, there's so many other expectations. Like, well, the dad doesn't really understand, or, like, he has a daughter, like, he's not going to know how to relate to you. Like, there's all these other, stereotypes. Yeah,
I guess. Yeah. I mean, maybe it's more if it's, like, if I was a son, that wouldn't be necessarily true. It's like, oh, the dad's, like, I guess, like, one of my moms was the one to always take me to the dentist probably or something when I was little. And then, so I guess, like, in that way, it's like, oh, the down to business mom, like the one that has to take the kid to the doctor's appointments. Like, one is like that. So I guess if we're talking about, like, primary caregiving in, like, that way, but I've never thought of it.
Right.
Because those terms, I guess, like, make sense. Like, one of them, like, you know,
do you think that you see, I mean, do you see the world in, like, a less category? Do you think that you see it less categorized than most people? Like, I mean, like, I don't, you know, I don't judge, or I don't want to judge people by gender, or they think they have a certain gender or assume their gender or their race or any of that stuff. But I notice that I am aware of it. Do you think you are just genuinely don't have to get past that level of thinking of, like, where you're aware of it?
I think we all have to still be pretty, like, thinking about it. I also think that in the last, like, since when I was a kid, like, the LGBT community was not tied to gender. Like, it was all sexuality. Of course, there was, like, trans people, but even that, like, we were not at the place we are now. And honestly, I still don't think we're 100% there.
I think it's still, I can't, like, I mean, I was saying this to you before we got on. I mean, I can't believe that we aren't further along.
Yeah.
Or, you know, for how long I've been watching all this stuff.
Yeah, and I think that. But my parents are not great on gender stuff, too. I think a lot of people, like, assume I lived in this, like, queer utopian palace, but, like, my parents they're aging cis women. Like,
so what do you mean, like, as far as, like, trans people and stuff, like, what aren't they good about?
Yeah, they're not great at, like, using, like, they them pronouns. Like, they have the same struggles of, like, probably, you know, mm-hmm. well-intentioned straight parents, like, mm-hmm. because that they them wasn't something that came up when they were, you know, mm-hmm. fighting for their own rights. So mm-hmm. now that they feel more comfortable, like, you know, they don't, and, you know, we're not 100% on gay rights in America, arguably. Like, certainly, we're not there yet.
We're better, but the fact that their marriage is legal is, like, that's
a big step.
That's a huge step, yeah.
Yeah.
So how did you learn about men or boys? Like, did you have a, what, did you, are you, you're bisexual and you have mm-hmm. a boyfriend. You said you've had a boyfriend, a relationship for 2 years.
Yeah, so that's a little over 2 years. We live together. It's big stuff for me.
No, that's way more mature than most of the kids your age.
Yeah.
I think.
He's cool.
I had somebody in here last week who was 38, and I think his longest relationship was 2 years. So, I mean, you know what I'm saying? Like, you are obviously somebody who knows how to have who is a relationship-oriented person. So, did you have boyfriends in high school, or how did you find out about boys? Like, well, what was that like for you? Do you think it was different than other?
It's weird. I was always kind of boy crazy. Like, I had a crush on a guy in kindergarten. Like, I don't know. Maybe I was always just a boy crazy person, and I'm not really even sure why. I had older sisters too. I have two older sisters, and I think having older sisters and seeing like boyfriends or like watching like,
right,
you know, like Grease when I was like really young, I was like, yeah, boyfriends, you know, like, so I guess it wasn't that weird. Like, I know it was never a conscious thing for me where it's like you learn about boys, but having like two straight older sisters, like you learn about like stuff young, you know?
Oh, right, right.
One of them is only like, under a year older than me, and the other one is 3 years older than me. So like, you know, you see like, you see them, yeah, you know, so talking about boys.
How did your mothers react? Like, are they like totally like a normal parents when it comes to dating or boys, the boys you brought home?
They certainly, I think, would rather, one of them would certainly rather me be with a boy than a woman. And I always just joke, it's like, oh, she doesn't want me making the same mistake she did. But I don't know why. I do think she's like, oh, you can pick? Like, why would you pick the hard one? And I was like, okay, a lot to unpack there. But no, she really likes the current boyfriend I have. His name's Sam. I can say his name on the air.
Yeah, whatever, but, whatever you want.
His name's Sam. He's very, very chill. She likes him a lot. So, but I had a boyfriend I had one boyfriend in high school that like she met, and I think she was fine with.
Does it seem normal? Does it seem, I mean, from the outside looking in, it does seem like just easier if you put it down to make a choice, simple. If you make it that simple, it seems easier to be a hetero.
It's weird for me because like, I guess like it's such like a, I just feel like you know, you fall for who you fall for. Like I personally say I'm bisexual, but honestly, like I just am like, whoever it is, like is whoever it is. Like I don't really break it down in a lot of ways.
No.
And she is still in an older generation who does have those breaks and like have those. And also I think just coming up in the queer community when she did, because, you know, she had me at 28. So she's like, you know, 28 years older than me.
I'm
29.
I'm not saying that like people pick or should pick or can pick. I'm just saying the way society is set up, it does seem easier. Yeah. Right.
And I think when she was coming out, it was a very different time. Like I think for her, it's like, oh, it's easier. I'm like, actually, it's.
Now it doesn't matter.
Now it's different.
Well, now it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter in the world that you're living in at the time you're living in it. But there are people.
I mean, I think there's even people in Brooklyn. I don't think we like to talk about them. And like, I don't think we like to do that. But I think there's a lot of like under the water prejudices still. It's very. It's there. It's just deep in there.
Well,
you know?
One thing I'm really aware of is sexism.
Yeah.
So, and the way women are treated. So, and you know, I mean, I'm 62. I say this every time, but in case you haven't memorized or haven't heard my show before, but the thing is, it's like at my age, I live in Bushwick. I'm around all sorts of people of all ages and all that stuff all the time, especially being involved with the radio station. And I still think, like, there's a lot, these young people, man, there's still so much, like, sexism. There's still a lot of really hipster, narrow-minded young people, right?
Yeah, well, and I think, too, it's, like, it's a different type of sexism. Like, I think when you think back in, like, history, like, sexism was one thing where it was, like, you know, women don't belong in the boardroom. I don't, that's my 1970s accent, I don't know. But, like, I think now it's, like, more like, oh, maybe she would be, like, maybe we should have her on the sidelines. And like the way we talk about sexism and the way people experience sexism is a lot of the times, like more, sometimes it's still just like straight out there. In your face.
Yeah, right.
But like a lot of the one that I think people see now is this really under the surface.
Yeah, that's horrible.
Stuff.
Exactly. And that's the part that I'm talking about that I don't think has changed that much. They call that microaggression now.
Yes, is the microaggressions.
So I gotta do another station ID. Is it hot in here?
I can.
Do
open
you
want
to open the door a little bit?
I get freezing and then very warm.
I'm
and
feeling
I don't
better know. About my Invisaligners. This is the first show, and I don't feel like I can hear them at all. Can you guys? I think it's fine. But you know what? I want to remind you once again that you're listening to Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit on Radio Free Brooklyn. It's a great show that's on every Thursday, 2 to 3 live. There's also all our episodes on Podomatic or the show page or whatever. And I'm here today with a really, really interesting and very, very bright, bright woman. Rosa Escandón. And yep. One of the, we're talking about, well, she had two moms, and we're talking about that, and we're talking about a lot of other things. And she's also very involved in launching the inaugural Black Woman Comedy Festival. So, you know, all that kind of stuff. But so I just want to say thanks for listening, and you know, go to our radiofreebrooklyn.org page. We also have these great apps that you can download and then carry around Radio Free Brooklyn with you all the time. radiofreebrooklyn.org/iPhone or /Android, depending on what kind of device you prefer. And I told this friend of mine who is really brilliant artist, and I want to give her a big shout out because she's having a show coming up, and I want you all to know about this. And Rosa, you too, you're invited to this opening, which is going to be really...
love a good art opening.
This is going to be a really good one. So it's Tuesday, February 5th at 6 to 8, and the artist is Thedra Color Ledford. She's been on the show too. I had a great session. I'm going to repost with her and her son where they talked about a lot of stuff. There was a lot of sex talk, which surprised me, but they were both that I heard later that he absolutely loved being on the show. So that was great. But anyway, so she's doing this really great show called End All Nations, where the bodies of models to look like a doll. She paints bodies of models to look like a doll and then takes photographs of them and life size and then goes back and repaints them. So it's going to be really, really interesting. And it's the Ivy Brown Gallery, which is at 675 Hudson Street. That's the Ivy Brown Gallery. And I met Ivy Brown and she's awesome. And this gallery is great. So I'm going to post that as well with this on my page. So you should come to that. I'm definitely going there, and it'll be really great. Back to you. Let's talk about. So you write a lot about women and women in comedy,
yeah,
stuff like that. So I want to hear your take on. So I posit that I don't think women have advanced that much since my generation, and which is like two. Am I old enough to be your grandmother? Don't say yes. I hope not.
Yes.
Do I seem like I'd be your grandmother?
No, you'd be.
Could you picture me as your grandmother? No.
There would also be a lot of teenage moms, I think, somehow, in that if we broke down the years,
maybe
it wouldn't quite work.
Maybe easily I could be your mother, but
if you're 62, you're the same age as my mother.
Yes, yeah, that's what I'm saying. But I was a stepmother. I became a stepmother in my 40s, so I never to an 8-year-old, so I never wiped anybody's ass, and I never got pregnant or any of that shit. So I'm not a real adult. I'm not a real adult. That's what I'm trying to tell you. But I wanted to read you viewers there, read to you, because I don't know if all of you can read. Maybe some of you can. I don't know. But I'm going to read this quote from Rosa that I took from my research on Rosa. And Rosa wrote, tell me if I'm wrong. I'm quoting you, Rosa.
What is this in? That's my question.
I don't know. It's off your website. You've written some. She's written
somewhere.
There's so much material about you. I could have done research on you for like a whole day, and there's no way I'm doing that.
No, I'm a pretty open book. That's what I said coming into the studio. I'm like, I'm pretty open.
Okay, so this is what surprises me about your generation, that you write this as you see it. As women... Rosa over here says, yeah, as women, we are taught to wait for the first date, wait for the phone call, and wait for the ring. We are told we should let him be dominant. If you come on too strong, then you are a bitch and you'll scare him away. How is, like, I'm not saying that you wrote, Rosa, did you say that?
That sounds like certainly something I could say. That sounds like something I'd say. I don't remember where I wrote it.
Like, so here's what I'm wondering about. Like, so I was single. I mean, I had a boyfriend 23 to 31, and then I had to start dating again, and I was single for like an over 10 more years of dating and not dating, whatever. And I started out, I actually had a lesbian therapist at the time who, whatever. So I started
out. Was it my own mom? No.
Might have been. No, I doubt it. Did she have a house upstate? No.
No.
Anyway, so I had a lesbian. I actually didn't find out. It was, you know how I found out my shrink was a lesbian? Because I was standing on Fifth Avenue and 14th Street watching the gay parade, and there she was.
Oh.
But anyway, so. But anyway, at the time, I was being influenced by that, and I and my own take charge type self, and I just felt like if you wanted to go out with a guy, take charge and do all this. And then after I broke up with a lesbian therapist and got more experience, I began to understand, oh, you have to wait for them to call you. And that was more effective, harder, more uncomfortable, but more effective. And so that's basically what you're saying here. And so what I'm wondering about, is it biology? Is it like, why has that not changed?
Well, I think women are taught that. And I think men are also taught that this is what's expected. I think men are also like, I think as women, we're taught it. And I think men are taught the opposite, where it's like, this is your thing. And I personally don't approach dating that way at all. And I'm not sure exactly where that quote came from, but I'm sure it was someone asking me something like, oh, like talk about dating. And for me, I don't approach it that way. I think maybe this is as a queer woman, I am like, oh, it doesn't matter because I often am pursuing people who are not male. So like, I guess who cares? But I think on the other side of that is like the guys who feel like they need to be the one who's dominant and pursuing are the guys I don't want to date.
Mm-hmm.
So if I get into a thing where it's like I texted them or I called them or I did this and they're like, oh no, she's too strong, she comes on crazy, like that's not a guy I'm going to end up with in the long run. Like fine for a couple dates, but I know very quickly if they're that into like the roles of gender and are too scared of a woman who breaks those roles, they're not going to like me.
Okay, so do you think that that is common? But okay, so are there a lot of women that are waiting for the guy to ask them out? I mean, do you hear that a lot?
From like friends of mine, I hear that still. And I think it's because we see it in movies. We're said it by older women, like, you know, our moms may have said that, or like even like sometimes very inappropriately, like a guidance counselor, like someone who should not be saying that. And so we get into our head like, oh, like that's how you do this, or that's how you do it. And I think in like places like Brooklyn or where I'm from, Oakland, like that's breaking down. That ideal is gone. It's a very white ideal, I should say. But this whole thing is like kind of breaking down. And I think in places, though, that are not as hip and cool or young or whatever you want to call it, you are still getting like women who very much believe it and will be passing that down, you know?
Right. I see that a lot here, though. I see that a lot where the girls are like giggling and hanging around the guys and trying to make them. I think there's like a lot of male ego stuff where men need to feel dominant.
Yeah.
Do you think that in every relationship, one person is dominant pretty much?
I think in good relationships, it's a give and take. I think, you know, like in relationships that work, they're like, you're not dominant in everything, because if you're dominant in everything, like, I think that's just exhausting for the person, and it's the exhausting for the other person who has to like be under you the whole time. Like,
that's not a relationship. No, that's a job.
That's a job. So I think like in all relationships that work or that are like healthy for both people, like maybe there's give and take and there's balancing. But I mean, I think also like looking back at like, you know, probably not my parents' generation, and that is because also my parents are not straight, but like my grandparents' generation, like that was such a thing where it was like men are just the most dominant one. And like, you know, my grandfather got divorced, like, you know, back in the day. Another one, like, you know, I like my other two grandparents, like my dad's and my other mother's parents stayed together. And but I only really believe one of them had like a really healthy relationship, you know, mm-hmm. till the end. I think one of them mm-hmm. had an okay relationship.
But, how did you meet your boyfriend?
Through friends.
And who asked who out? Or were you friends? How did it happen?
Yeah, we had met multiple times before I started dating him. Like kind of.
He was like in your group.
He was more like we have this. How I always say is we have the same best friend. His best friend from high school is my best friend from college.
Oh, that's cool.
So, yeah, we're two people with the same best friend is how we met.
That's great.
And he's really great. He's actually he lives in New Mexico now. So the best friend. Not even here. But great guy. We both still really love him.
That's so nice.
But yeah, no, we have. Okay. The first, let's see. I think I probably made the first move, but he asked me on the first date.
So you knew you were attracted to him?
Yeah. I think I put out like the first.
Him.
Yeah.
Knew you would say yes?
Yeah. He knew I would say yes. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's. So I guess both. I don't know who.
It sounds pretty mutual.
Pretty mutual.
That
yeah.
sounds really healthy, actually.
He's honestly the healthiest relationship I've ever had. I've mm-hmm. had some super unhealthy relationships, and he might be the only healthy one.
Look at this guy. She's 25, and she has a healthy relationship. You can do it.
You can do it too. No, and he's also I'm very high energy. I'm a huge. I'm like a pathological extrovert, is what I say.
You are really energetic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
look at this resume.
The chillest person I've ever met. Like he's
so you guys are really good match.
Calm. Yeah. He brings me down. Like he levels me.
Right. Right. Right.
So I think that's always a good. At first, I even tell a joke on stage about him being boring. Like which he's heard many times, so I can say it aloud on a radio station. But. like he really does, I think, balance out in those ways, which mm-hmm. He's very supportive, which I think everyone should look mm-hmm. for someone who supports them.
So he's not a comedian, but he supports your comedy.
Yeah.
Does he come see you a lot?
Yeah. He comes see, he works at night. He works in TV. So he works nights a lot. So if he's not if he's not working, he'll usually come.
So you guys actually have, because yeah. I mean, that seems one of the bigger obstacles with comedians and non-comedian couples is the scheduling.
Yeah. Well, and it's honestly because we live together and I'm all my writing I do mostly from home. Like I don't go into an office mm-hmm. or anything. So like because we have such strange schedules and also mm-hmm. like we live together, like I see him, you know, mm-hmm. when we first started dating, I was working a normal 9-to-5 job and he was working at nights. And that was really hard because it was like strangers in the night.
Oh,
like,
right, right.
That was really difficult.
So what about the comedy community? So women and what's your feeling about women about gender and comedy right now? You know, there's so much. We all hear about it. We hear about Louis C.K. and all this other stuff. But what's your take on it since
I'm here? No,
and since you've written about it, you seem to really.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting because I think there's more opportunities for women in comedy than ever before. I really do believe that like, you know, back in the day, you were, you know, there was not much room for women. I think we've really busted out in a lot of ways. I think at the same time, especially in like the club model of comedy, there's like, you know, they don't want a ton of women on mm-hmm. stage. I think underground places, more like avant-garde, like the outer borough scenes are always like more accepting of women. And there are some clubs that are great and some like club owners who are amazing, who like really do like put it out there. But, you know, I've seen shows without a single woman on it
mm-hmm.
and like, or a token woman mm-hmm. maybe. Mm-hmm. And it's like, yeah, well, that's not great. You know, there's a boys club on some level.
What's the sensibility? Like I remember, it wasn't that long ago. I went to the Creek in the Cave.
Oh yeah.
To see, I went there to see, he's been on the show a couple of times. Grant Lindahl, you know?
Yeah, Grant's cool. Great artist, too.
Oh, he's so talented. So anyway, I went to see him, and I went downstairs to the open mic room.
Oh,
And it was disgusting. It was like basically you walk in there, and it smells like a locker room, and there's all these boys standing around taking themselves really seriously. That had like the most un-female-friendly atmosphere to me.
And it's too bad because that club is actually one of the few owned by a woman.
I know. I mean, it's a great club, and I'm just talking about one. I'm not saying it's like that by any means. I'm talking about the experience that I had the one.
But
you know,
here's
I don't go regularly.
I've been to Mike's there where I totally know that feel. And there's some really awesome women who produce stuff there and like really open. There's like women's gatherings, which is great. Like they try to get women in the door, but like, yeah, no, I have to say walking into a room full of just dudes, and I've done it, you know, hundreds of times now, I feel like, where you just walk in and it's just a sea of guys and you're like, okay, well, there it is, you know.
But I'm talking about like what I'm trying to explore is like the actual feelings, like kind of what we were saying before, the microaggressions, like what men are feeling, what women are feeling. Like I feel like sometimes women, you know, are being judged on their sexuality. And I'm just saying, like, I don't know, I am an old lady, but I'm saying like sometimes as a young person, I don't care anymore because I'm married and I'm old, but which is such a relief. But anyway, except for I do care. I have my Invisaligners because I do care, but that's my teeth. So anyway, the point I'm making is that I think women are still evaluated by themselves and by others on their sexual currency and their appearance and stuff like that. What do you think about that?
I think in entertainment, that's really true. I think in comedy, there's a weird double standard of like, if you're too pretty, like you're not funny. And, you know, I think there's like a weird thing there. And audiences kind of, I think, feel that too, where it's like, you know, comedy is one of the last places that you don't need to be good looking to make it in Hollywood. Like, that being said, the women who often, like, I think the women who, you know, in comedy are really beautiful, but it's not that Hollywood standard, you know?
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, I do think like, there are weird stuff being just like a woman in the room and like things that I don't think men would comment on each other, like get commented on, you know, and kind of looks are part of that. And like also maybe how you dress, how you do this, how you do that. Like those are things that might get commented on more as a woman, by other comedians, but also by like audiences, by producer, like by anyone. Like it's a little bit more fair game. I work with a lot of women. I love women producers. I love women comedians. Like I work with a lot of women. And you know, hopefully it's better, though. There's some self-hating stuff. There's some, you know, you hear whatever, but I do have to say there's a lot of great men in comedy and there's also some of the worst men you'll ever meet in comedy.
I mean, like, you know, it is all over the place, but do you think what has to change? What do you think? Like, do you think it seems like there's attitudes that are really like everybody, it's like everybody's saying the right things, but I don't think they really believe it.
Yeah. I think, like I've been at places where I like know that guys won't say stuff to my face, but like I've heard them on like another podcast or another show or something, just say something disgusting. And like, you know, that they're like, to you, like they're like, oh, this is great, like cool that you're here, and then like I'll hear them turn around and like say something messed up, like
what would they say?
This on one show I did terrible. I, to be honest, I was doing awful, and like I heard one guy who was another comedian like turn to maybe he was a comedian, maybe he was just an audience member, and it was just like, ugh, they just booked her because she's a girl. And I was like, okay, like that kind of stuff is like, you hear that, you know, where it's like, ugh, like, guess they had to book the woman. And I was doing terrible on that show. Like, you know, I was bombing really hard. Right. I tried some new jokes. It happens.
Yeah.
And like, I think if I had killed it, like maybe he wouldn't have said that. But like, he would have never said that to a guy who's bombing. Like if another white guy's bombing, it's just like, ah, tough break guy. Like, where like you kind of get that feeling where it's like, mm-hmm. those are the microaggressions that I hear mm-hmm. a lot. I've heard women aren't funny a lot. I've heard like that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. That almost rolls off me because like,
it's so dumb. Or yeah. That doesn't make any sense. No, I mean, yeah.
I've seen a lot of just like also posts to like Facebook about just like, just something disparaging or like,
mm-hmm. Think it has to do with everybody's insecurity though? I think, like, I guess I'm thinking it does. Like, I think it has to do with like guys feeling like that they're not in control. They want to be dominant. And I think yeah. women are genuinely, we do worry that we're not pretty enough. We do. A lot yeah. of women, right? Isn't that true?
Well, and I think too, like whenever I go on stage, I try to not look a mess. Like I never wear like certain things or like I never like try to look like I'm, you know, slovenly. And if I do, I make a comment about mm-hmm. it, make it into a joke. But like, I do believe like I've seen guys go on stage in sweatpants. Like I think that there's like a level where it's like some people just don't think about their looks and it's fine because, you know, you can still make it in comedy, not worrying about your looks. Yeah. But I think as women, yeah, like there's some things I don't care about. Like I don't care about unshaven pits or like what, like there are some things I've just been like, that's a beauty standard I don't care about. But mm-hmm. there's other stuff where it's like, oh no, I definitely don't want to look like this on stage. Or like, I don't want to show my toes or like, I don't want to show. The one you'll hear about with men is a lot of men won't wear shorts on stage. But other than that, like
why? Too casual.
That's like an old school thing from like the old era where like you wouldn't like men wear pants, you know, like it's a holdover from mm-hmm. like, you know, years and years and years of like, you know, Lenny Bruce going on stage in a suit and like somehow mm-hmm. that's gone like mm-hmm. only to don't wear shorts. But yeah, I think women have more to think about than that.
Yeah. I mean, it is something that we all have to deal with in all areas of being a woman, being a women's.
Yes.
I mean, one of the things that drives me crazy is like, for example, how all women newscasters have to get made up so much. And then when women are made up like that, they look like they're trying to appeal to men, whether they are or they aren't. I'm not saying they are, but I'm saying like, that's what it's, they're trying to look pretty. And I think like, there's nothing wrong with looking attractive, but I think like there's just so much bullshit that women are when I was your age, I mean, you know, we were all like, everybody wanted to be flat chested. There's all this crap now and
people want to be flat chested again. That's like back in, I think there's so many weird things of like, oh, people want to be this, people want to be that. I want to be flat chested because my back hurts all the time and someday it's gonna happen after I have kids, just snip them right off. But you know, I think there is like certain things where we do for other women, but I also think that like I think fashion trends, like my boyfriend like has absolutely no idea what I'm wearing at any time. Mm-hmm. He's like, that looks like I can dress up or dress, like he has no idea.
Yeah.
Whereas I think like that's what I do for other women. Like
yeah, we love fashion.
Because I'm like, ooh, I want someone to compliment my boots. Like my.
Yeah. Or I feel like I look hot. I want to feel like I look hot.
Look hot. And like arguably a lot of like the fashion choices I make are probably not the ones like I'm wearing. As you can see, I'm going to a photo shoot after this and I'm wearing practically a turtleneck, like where it's like, OK, if
you
I was
look great.
Thank you.
I think you look. But it's kind of revealing. It's not a turtleneck. Yeah. I mean, but. I know what you mean.
Whereas like if I was really going for like what men think is sexy, like I would definitely be like showing more skin or like, I haven't put on makeup yet. I will probably put on makeup, but
really you haven't. Well, I think like you are the visual of your comedy. So I think unless your comedy is about being sexual, I think you want to have a sexually neutral appearance in a certain way, right?
Yeah, and I mean, I have some sex jokes, but it's never like, look how hot I am. I think if I had jokes where it was like, I'm really sexy, I would probably try to like embody that more.
Like would you say Sarah Silverman is like that? Or what do you think about her?
I think she's really funny. I love her. I grew up watching
Me too. But I mean, as an example of
I'm thinking more of like, I'm trying to think of anyone who's like a Jenny McCarthy almost, who I don't like, but like had so many of those jokes about being like hot and fuckable, like where it was like, you needed to also look that way, because if I went on stage and I was like, look how hot and fuckable I am, it would either have to be kind of that joke of like, and there's a couple comedians doing it on the scene right now who do it really, really well.
Yeah.
Where it's like, I know I'm not the most hot person, but like, that's part of why this is funny. Or I just have to be really, really confident. And
right,
I don't,
right.
For me, I'm like, that's not that that's funny to me.
Well, it also doesn't seem that integral to like the kind of work you're doing anyway.
Yeah.
Black women in comedy seem to, what's your thought about black women in comedy? Have they been making strides? It seems to me like they have. What's your thoughts?
I think there's strides. I know that like, and I'm, you know, I'm just the media, like a media coordinator on this festival. We have an amazing,
Who's your headliners, or do you want to mention any?
Yeah,
names?
We have Khalees Hawkins, who I'm really excited about. She's really funny. We have this woman named, Michelle, the indie mom of comedy. She's really, really funny. Janelle Jackson.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I love her.
We have a couple of real, and we have some people dropping in too, and like some featuring people who are really cool. So, we're going to have some really fun
shows.
Yeah,
you are.
But our leader, Joanna Briley, has been working forever in this city. She's amazing. And honestly, like if you ever get a chance to talk to her, she's great. But she's like the head of this festival. We have a great board, and they really, it's her, why her and this, other woman, Shana Christmas, decided to do this festival was because like women are making these like rooms where it's like, there's not a lot of black women always in it. Like comedy has gotten better for women, but you know, there was like a female comedy festival in New York, and I'm forgetting the name, or I don't want to say it. You decide. who they were doing like a all women like thing, and they only had one person of color on the lineup, and she was Hispanic.
That's weird.
Where it's like not a single black woman on it. Hmm. So like, I think, you know, there's this need to be like, we are here and we exist, and I think there's been like some strides, but you know, there's also, I think women, white women have been a lot more integrated into comedy than black women have in like the past couple of years. So I know they were kind of doing this festival to be like, hey, this is great. Like, I'm not even going to be on stage on this festival. I'm helping out, but I'm like, nope, not my mic.
Well,
like,
well, my perception from somebody who mostly is a consumer of comedy is that, black women have integrated in with white women, or let's say women of color have integrated in with white women better than women in general have integrated in with men.
Yeah, I probably. I'd have to look at some like stats on that. I think that the thing is like a lot of men right now have like the one woman on the lineup, and that woman is almost always white. Like if you have a one woman lineup, like that's a white woman where it's like, and some men are better. They're trying to book multiple things. And I think there's more nights, like there'll be like a Latina night, and that'll be great because it's all Latina comics. But getting on more mainstream or like not themed shows is still really hard.
But you know what? I think there's this kind of boy style comedy, and I don't think that's going away. And I think that can only have boys or guys or men, or call them whatever you want. I don't think women are ever going to get into that. And I think there is like, I think a lot of it is the consumer too, right?
Well, that's like, and we probably don't have time for me to go wax poetic, but like, I think that's this whole thing with like booking like guys like Louis C.K. Like he still has a sold out audience. So is like T.J. Miller, Aziz Ansari. Like these are guys who will always have a sold out audience. So like as a booker, it's like, well, why wouldn't we book them? Even if people are like, oh, what they did was gross. This is bad comedy. This is this. Is like, as long as people consume comedy, that comedy is going to get made.
Well, I think there is a world of comedy, and it's not the kind of comedy I like you were saying, club comedy, but I think there is a world of comedy that's just kind of teenage boy humor, and I think like that women don't want to infiltrate that maybe and never are going to. And those aren't the boys that we want to date or have anything to do with. Anyway,
but
we're not going out. Screw you guys. Are any of you listening to this? You know, if you guys are, you know, get with it, okay? So anyway, I'm going to have to say thank you so much.
Yeah.
Say your website.
Yeah, it's rosaescondone.com, or you can follow me on social media. Almost all of them are at Human Comedian. Stuart, I spell my last name.
Human Comedian, at Human Comedian. Stick around because, you know, we've got Ilan Danziger, Lost and Rewound after this. And it's always really great. Ilan's great, great storyteller, great music.